All right, it is 7 o'clock here on October 21st. Roosevelt Middle School Learning Center. Can I get a roll call?
Mrs. Avalos.
Here.
Mr. Davis.
Here.
Mrs. DeGracias.
Here.
Mrs. Hickey.
Here.
Mr. Moore.
Here.
Dr. Thompson is not here. Ms. Williams.
And the first order of business is to recognize visitors and invite comments from the public. And we have two speakers who have signed up. Is it Judith?
That's me. Do you want me to stand up?
Yeah, you could go to the podium.
Over here? Oh, okay, I got a podium. Okay, I am Judith McDevitt. I live at 411 Ashland Avenue in River Forest. So I'm in your district D90 area. And I'm also a member of the Oak Park River Forest League of Women Voters. And I'm here tonight to urge our school board to instruct its delegate to the upcoming Illinois Association School Boards Conference on November 23rd to vote no on resolutions 1 and 3. These resolutions encourage the arming of teachers and staff. Last year, the resolution on arming teachers was defeated by only 24 votes at this conference. So it's essential that our District 90 delegate to the conference, if you're sending one, should vote no on resolutions 1 and 3. That's the position of the League of Women Voters. If resolution 1 is passed, the Illinois Association of School Boards will advocate for legislation permitting school boards to develop plans to train and license faculty and administrators to carry a firearm in school while students are present. If resolution 3 is passed, the Illinois Association of School Boards will fund grants for districts to hire school resource officers or security personnel who can carry firearms. So research has found that most SROs, school resource officers, are not trained to work with children. And this is a real problem when you have police interacting with children and they don't have training about how to do that with children. So I have fact sheets on resolutions 1 and 3, and I've given you all copies of them. There's some additional copies on that chair right there if anybody in the audience would like to have one. It's an important issue, and we hope that your opinion of the school board will coincide with the position of the League of Women Voters that we advocate. This is not a way to keep our children safer in school. That's all.
Thank you.
So we have on our agenda this item for discussion later. So thank you. Anja Herman?
Anya.
Welcome. And you are more than welcome to present from wherever you wish.
I'll try to make it up to the volume.
You are very pleased to do so.
Thank you.
I think it's actually the table that we keep the dictionary on.
So,
dual purpose.
Okay. Hello, board. My name is Anya Corvises Herman. I am here tonight to talk to you about the shortcomings regarding accessibility right here at Roosevelt Middle School. I can think of three ways off the top of my head that the accessibility at this school is subpar. First, the lift at the second floor is often unreliable and inconsistent, as I saw in the last couple of weeks. This impedes my learning because I must make sure my classes move so I can participate with my peers. Secondly, I cannot enter any restroom without a teacher or aide because the doors are too heavy to lift with my feet and there's no accessible door opener feature. Thirdly, there is not a single point of entry into the school I can use independently because, again, there is no accessible door feature. All of these disable me more than my impairment, if you can believe that. It's too late for me to see the effect of any actions you take, but a new generation of Roosevelt Bulldogs is coming, and I urge you to conduct an accessibility study. Please incorporate disability into your consideration of equity and strategic planning. Disability rights are human rights. Thank you for your consideration. Anya Herman.
Well, thank you, Anya.
Thank you, Anya, for advocating for future students as well. And I know that facilities are always on our, and accessibility is always something that we are looking into. So thank you for bringing that up. Okay, the next item is the approval of the agenda.
Motion to approve.
Second.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassius?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Communications? Any communications?
Yes. There are two. One is an invitation to the board for an event hosted by Baha'i Faith Community Center. I will pass it around. It is, they're showing the Dawn of Light film. There's an hour of prayer and a luncheon. I'll pass this around for the board to look at. And we have a piece of communication, a thank you for the family of Christine Cagney for keeping them in our hearts and thoughts during their difficult time. That's all.
And now the best event of any board meeting would be student presenters. Do we have student presenters here this evening?
We have Crystal and Sky, I think. Good evening, how are you?
I'm good, how are you?
Nice to see you. Thank you for coming tonight. Do you have a lot of homework waiting for you at home?
I already started it.
Okay. Well, good choice.
So I'm Crystal Thomas, and my co-presenter, Skycast, unfortunately couldn't make it because she's at an away game for the Roosevelt girls basketball team. And we have made a presentation for all of you.
The white one. You want the lights off over on that side?
Sure.
Okay, so one question, what's the most engaging activity so far this year and what subject?
The beginning of writing class, because we get to write in our journals whatever we want and then share.
Okay, three,
one time.
Science, because we do a lot of learning in that class.
So my question is, what is the most engaging activity so far this year? Please tell us the subject.
For me, the most engaging subject so far would probably be either social studies or music. Music because, well, obviously we have instruments that we play, we have songs that we write, and for social studies, we're actually doing a lot more projects than usual in the class, and it's really fun. Spanish, because we have to learn the language and the teacher makes us adapt to the language in class.
Probably gym.
Because we get to engage in physical activity.
My name is Elliot Stoker and I'm in sixth grade, and my favorite engaging activity is Lego robotics, and I think this because it's you get to use your hands to really, it's really hands-on when you're building, and if you don't really want to be hands-on, you can code, which I feel like is really fun if you don't really want to use your hands or build. And my favorite thing is that you work with other people and you problem solve to really understand how to work this robot out, like make this robot, and how to make it as good, as awesome as possible.
Hi, I'm Elisa, and I'm in sixth grade.
Okay, so I have a question for all of you. What's your most engaging activity so far this year? Please tell us something.
The location we chose for art installation was the elevator. We chose this spot because the elevator looked like a great place for a sea life aquarium. It is clear and had great lighting. The global goal we chose was life below water. Did you know that 12.7 million tons of plastic enter the ocean each year, which is so much plastic? An important element we included was texture and lines. We used texture by adding the plastic bags and straws to represent the trash in the ocean. We also used lines by the different coral and shapes. We want to encourage people to save the sea life by using less plastic.
I'm Declan and I am in eighth grade.
My question is, what is the most engaging activity so far this year? Be sure to tell us what subject it is.
Duolingo, I just drew it at home. I like to learn a lot of Japanese and it's really fun. Hi Mom, I'm on TV.
Hi, my name is Grace, I'm in sixth grade, and my most engaging activity would be band, and I really like it. It's super fun. You get to meet new people, learn new things, and it really helps you in life because it can help you in music, it can help you learn the rhythms, and you can understand things that other people don't understand really, and then it can really give you a big
advantage. Okay, what is the most engaging activity so far this year? Be sure to tell us what subject is.
I'm going to say the science lab.
Okay, what is the most engaging
experiments so far?
I'm in 7th grade.
Okay.
Okay, so my question is, what's the most engaging activity so far this year?
I think gym has been awesome.
I think social studies because we have a lot of discussions.
I think math because I love learning new things in math.
I'm Maggie.
And I'm Anna.
And we're from 7th grade and we're talking about social studies in 7th grade.
Social studies is really engaging because Mrs. Daniel sings a lot, which is really nice.
And that makes us pay attention more because she's singing and it brings attention to her.
We also do a lot of engaging activities, like we walk around the room. And in my opinion, it really helps that we do a lot of notes because that makes me remember more and how we write it down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she makes us walk around the room She also asks our opinion on a lot of things, and yeah.
She's just a very happy person in general, which is
nice. She asks us to smile a lot.
So if I can ask a question, what's something we've learned this year?
Oh, well, we've learned a lot of stuff, I feel like.
We've been learning the
remissions.
The New World started.
And the slave trade.
My name is J.R. Welshans and I'm in 5th grade. Lego robotics is engaging because you get to express your creativity and you can learn how to code and work together with a team.
It was really nice that you captured so many middle school voices, and I know that one of our presentations tonight will be preparing D90 students for high school and beyond, so it's really nice to have so many kids heard at this meeting. Thank you very much. Really well done.
Thank you.
You're welcome to stay for the next hour and a half.
But you don't have to.
You don't.
Smart. She's not going to.
Okay. Very well done. Okay, next is the consent agenda. I have a motion to approve the consent agenda, which includes minutes. Committee of the whole meeting, October 1st, payrolls, orders relating to payrolls, bills, and treasurer's report.
So moved.
Second. Mrs. Avalos?
Yes.
Mr. Davis?
Yes.
Mrs. DeGrassi?
Yes.
Mrs. Hickey?
Yes.
Mr. Moore?
Yes.
Ms. Williams?
Yes.
Okay, board committee reports. Dr. Thompson is not here. The education committee did meet, however.
We did, and Dr. Hall, you can jump in if you wanted to add anything. Really, the goal of that meeting was to bring the board liaison for the committee up to speed on some of the important things we did for the start of the year, the professional development that was provided for faculty and staff, both Teacher Institute and in the fall, the progress of the new curriculum and how that's moving forward, and the update on the work of this Superintendent's Leadership Council around standards-based learning.
Personnel committee?
I believe we have a report a little bit later in the evening.
Okay. Policy?
Nothing to report tonight.
Okay. All right. Finance, Mr. Davis?
We have the accounts payable treasurer's report in the packet and some other things we'll be discussing later on tonight.
Okay. The equity committee did meet, and Ms. Williams, being the veteran co-chair.
Yes, I'll give a quick update. We met on the 30th of September. We welcomed two new members to that committee. I'm just reading my notes here, so I'm staring at my phone. But it was really just a welcome back and a reset of the committee, and we did a review of our committee accomplishments to date. We talked about all the other things going on around the district, including what NEP is doing with our teachers, what the IEB is up to, including our student staff and parent survey that went out at the end of the school year last year that we're sort of distilling right now, which we'll get a report on. We review the Equity Committee goals for 2019 and 2020, reviewed some student data, and we did a review of the Easter Seals audit, which I know this board has seen. And then Ed and I will both give a report later on the Midwest Equity Network conference, that just two-day conference that happened last week.
Okay, look forward to that. Ms. DeGracias, facilities?
I believe we have some things related coming up in the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah, later.
All right. And communications?
We have not yet met since our last meeting, but I was really happy to see that it was video, you know, the video made it to the internet, and now everyone can watch us. So I was excited about that, and I'm sure we'll have more to report in the next couple months.
All right, the inaugural videotaping. I watched it three times. All right, and the Ad Hoc Gender Inclusion Committee has not met since our last report. Outside meetings, Council of Governments has not met. OPRF Community Council? Did the Community Council meet since,
oh, yes,
you, asked, since
yes,
you asked report?
Yes, and it was another presentation of the proposed 2021 fall curriculum changes.
Okay.
And that was the majority.
That makes sense. Youth Network Council?
They met, and the regular meeting date for the Youth Network Council is the second Thursday of every month. They met, it was a relatively small group. We talked a lot, I think, about the summer meals initiative at the food pantry, which is designed to reach out to kids who do not, who once school is over, do not have access to lunches. And the pantry has, over time, made a number of important efforts toward including more kids. And I believe they've reached out in the number of programs that they support that are already operating in other locations. So bringing the food to where there are already kids has been a major initiative, and they also have an open lunch program at St. Catherine St. Lucie's, which they had quite a few kids take advantage of this past summer. So that was the primary focus of that meeting.
Okay. Board liaison, district PTO.
I was unable to attend that meeting. Ed will cover that a little bit later, I believe.
Perfect. All right, Inclusiveness Advisory Board, Kate.
At our last meeting, we spent a lot of time talking about kind of what is going to be our big end of the year event, which will be a storytelling event that is similar to kind of like a moth storytelling hour. So we did kind of brainstorming about themes and how to publicize that, and also kind of some of the structure of how will we prepare kids, parents, teachers, community members who might want to participate. And we also talked about the results, started a little bit of the conversation about the results of the survey, but I believe at the next meeting we're going to dig into that a little more. Did I miss anything, Ed?
River Forest Civic Association, Dr. Thompson, the next meeting is November 21st. Citizens Corps Council.
I have a little recruitment problem right now, so things are moving a little slow, but I think they're going to have like a winter recruitment to try to just get people interested in helping out and explain a lot of the things they do. They do lemonade, they do pancake breakfast, they do Memorial Day parade, so just get more people active.
Westcook Governing Board, there's a meeting coming up.
Yes, there is a meeting coming soon.
October 22nd.
I was not planning to attend that, actually. But you and I can sidebar about that.
Okay. NRED, the next meeting is November 1st. River Forest Subcommittee on Collaboration.
Has not met.
Okay, moving right along here. Positive Youth Development Committee.
Positive Youth Development continues to focus on the issue of vaping, and the Kelly O'Connor, who works for the township, is the prevention coordinator for the township, has an outstanding presentation on vaping, which we're trying to figure out how, once again, to use the same philosophy that I just described to bring that information to where people are already meeting, rather than trying to give a meeting and involve people and get them to come. The information is very valuable. Vaping is kind of it's become a major issue. And with the legalization of marijuana, it's going to become even more important to talk about how it's going to work, and especially how to control it with regard to young people. So those conversations are ongoing with Positive Youth Development, and they also, I believe, this past weekend or this coming weekend, there is a prescription drug take-back day. And if I've missed that, I don't know the date off the top of my head, but PYD always encourages people to check their medicine cabinets and remove any prescription drugs that nobody needs. And they can always be taken, even if there's not a take-back day on the schedule. They can always be disposed of at our police stations and our fire departments. And it is a particularly important thing to do because kids tend to go into medicine cabinets and take those drugs. And they've been particularly a scourge with regard to opioids. So keeping an eye on what's in your medicine cabinet and taking out anything that isn't absolutely necessary is something that it's always worthwhile to be thinking about. Yeah. So that's another Positive Youth Development initiative.
Thank you. The Tri-Board Equity Committee has not met. And the next item is our district calendar review.
Yes, so board members, you'll see the upcoming events for November and December in your packet, starting on page 69. For the community's knowledge, some of the things we have on the horizon would include our next meeting of the board, which is actually the committee of the whole meeting. It is a town hall forum that will be held in the Roosevelt Auditorium at 7 p.m., and the subject is social-emotional learning in District 90. So something for everyone that night, and hopefully a chance for folks who want to engage to ask some good questions, too. Parent-teacher conferences are also forthcoming the first week of November, the 6th and 7th. We have a non-attendance day for students on the 8th, and then the board will reconvene for a full Board of Ed meeting on November 21st.
So that meeting is not on the 18th? Have the 18th.
For the Board of Ed?
Yeah.
Gosh, let's check.
18th.
Oh, is it an error?
I mean, the 21st is better for
me. No, it is the 18th, so there's an error in the board packet. We'll have to check that we have it posted properly on the website, too. Good catch, Ms. Williams. Thank you. 21st is a Thursday, so that would be a little unusual for us.
On the agenda, it says the 18th here.
Does it? Sorry, the calendar's wrong. So we'll make sure that that's noted. So again, the next Board of Ed meeting after the CAL will be November 18th. Hard to believe that the end of the month is Thanksgiving. So next we do have the district meeting agendas. I think we already kind of covered the waterfront on a couple of them. Katie spoke to the Inclusiveness Advisory Board topics, and Superintendent's Leadership Council also met. As the board is very well aware, the focus of their work is standards-based learning. And much of the meeting was dedicated to debriefing around the recent grade level release days, where teacher teams were able to work together around their standards-based learning work. We talked a little bit about forthcoming grade 5-8 social studies collaborations. And then the Superintendent's Leadership Council is actually evaluating two different books, leaning more towards the one that they're hoping to highlight for colleagues around grading practices. And so 15 fixes for broken grades, a repair kit for grading is probably the front runner of the two. We also looked at a sample document.
O'Connor or is it Guskey?
That's Guskey.
O'Connor.
Nicely done. We also looked at a sample document that another school district has in use that might be a really good resource for us in working with our teachers to talk about some of those standards-based learning and standards-based grading issues in the classroom. So more to come, but next meeting is Wednesday, November 20th. The district PTO council meeting focused most importantly on hearing all the things that our PTO is sponsoring and supporting throughout our schools. We also talked about the new inclusion preschool application process. We had a brief discussion of parent-teacher conferences, and the principals were able to answer some questions from PTO co-presidents about why we use the formats and the schedules that we do. We shared the presentation that will be forthcoming this evening. We talked a little bit about the tent poles for the strategic planning parent community engagement event, and this is a new addition. On December 11th, as part of the strategic planning process, D90 will be hosting any parent or community member who would like to come in and have a chance to kind of engage around the work. We will be looking at that point at the SWOT analysis that will have been completed about a week before in garnering feedback from parents and community members who would like to meet at that event. So that's a new addition. We'll start advertising that fairly broadly in early November. But
will community members have to RSVP or can they just
mention? Likely, no. Yeah, we do want to make sure it's as open as possible. We have, depending upon how it's coordinated, we have the ability to host small, medium, or large groups.
Okay.
But we'll likely do that. We have to confirm the location, but we'll likely do that down in the multi-purpose room, just for accessibility reasons.
That sounds great.
And then lastly, there was a nice conversation around, I shouldn't say nice conversation, let's say productive conversation around the issue of safety drills in District 90. Kind of the philosophy behind how we conduct them. There's one specific drill that is now required based on some new legislation around active shooters. And so our principals have been working along with our director of facilities and our school resource officer from the River Forest Police Department to try to kind of craft the way in which those drills are going to be here in our school, such that students are able to respond to them in a positive way, but that we don't also unnecessarily alarm them. It's finding the right way to conduct the active shooter drill is really important, and of course our principals know our students very, very well. So those will actually be conducted in the coming weeks. So that's what's on the horizon for PTO.
Oh.
Sorry.
October 26th. Saturday is the world famous pancake breakfast 5K run at Lincoln School. Anyone who would like to run in it or volunteer or just come and have pancakes on Saturday, we are there from 8 o'clock until 11 o'clock. The 5K will be running through the neighborhoods of River Forest. It is the 7th annual 5K.
Is it really?
Building a healthy community.
My family will be manning the water station. We will play some music. We will cheer. We will not use a cowbell.
I was at the first one, but since then my knees have given
up.
So.
You got one.
You got one in.
I feel like there's a nice yin and yang of the 5K and
the
syrup
pancake
and butter combo. You know.
I only run if I'm
butter
being chased.
Butter goes with everything.
There you go.
There you go.
A lot of hard work is going into that. And of course, I should share in fairness that Willard Elementary School had their pancake breakfast recently, and it was also a community hit. So
good.
People big numbers.
It's always fun.
Okay.
All right.
Superintendent's report.
So the first thing we wanted to share tonight, and while it is, don't be alarmed, folks, while it is a slideshow, I promise it won't take too much time. We had been receiving some questions fairly recently from community members, parents, who were asking a little bit about what is D90 doing? I mean, the specific question that we've received is this. What is District 90 doing to ensure that students are prepared for the rigor challenges of high school, especially in light of changing academic and social expectations? And while it's not on the slide, one might even add the phrase, knowing that so many of our students go to so many different schools. One of the things that's kind of unique about the River Forest landscape is that, unlike in some communities, not all of our kids go to the local public high school. On any given year, the number, actually the percentage, can vacillate. Sometimes it's as low as in the high 60%, sometimes in the high 70%, but somewhere in the low 70% of our kids, our graduates, do attend, obviously, Oak Park River Forest High School, have an outstanding experience. We also, though, have a pretty significant portion of kids that go to any number of private and parochial schools, sometimes nearby, sometimes they leave the state, they go to boarding school. We have many fine private institutions in our backyard. So it's not a new thing for our particularly middle school faculty, staff, and our middle school administration to need to communicate frequently with not only the public high school, but some of our more prominent private schools, and also do check-ins now and again to ensure that regardless of where our children go after eighth grade, they're going to be prepared to put their best foot forward. So tonight we just wanted to share kind of some of the areas in which we feel very strongly that that happens. And then I'm also going to acknowledge near the end of this of some items that maybe we feel like we can continue to do better, because we can certainly always continue to do better. These are the elements I think that we would want to look at, though, in terms of kind of the buckets of the ways in which we feel as though graduates from River Forest District 90 are well prepared to leave us and go on and do great things when they attend high school, regardless of where they attend. We'll talk not only about these five areas: content knowledge, learner competencies, social emotional learning, cultural elements, and technology, but also the basis for how we can make these claims. What's our proof? It's one thing to have us tell you this, but what's the, you know, the evidence that these things are real and that they are woven throughout our program intentionally and implemented deliberately? So, you know, there are different examples of how we could show and demonstrate that we're actually doing these things. In each of these areas, though, we wanted to put an example or two so that you can see the connections to real-life practice. Our content knowledge, of course, as Robert Marzano at his best, is rooted in what we consider to be our guaranteed and viable curriculum, which is always under construction. We've talked already briefly tonight about standards-based learning, but the board and many community members are very familiar with universal design for learning as a pedagogical approach and something that the district is pursuing. These are pedagogical ways to help engage students really in their learning, and we'll talk briefly about that, really to own, I should say, their learning as a student. Social-emotional learning, we'll talk about some of the different elements that we have embedded in the larger program. As far as the culture of our community, I think we all know that we're very, very blessed to have many resources in River Forest and some unique cultural elements that make this place a special place and are great assets for our kids. And then we are going to talk a little bit about instructional technology, because we know that's important for kids in being prepared moving forward. So in the area of content knowledge, you know, a lot of this is what I think most folks would think of with it when they think of high quality instruction, teaching and learning, right? You know, we do have the good fortune of a strong relationship, particularly with Oak Park River Forest High School leadership. Our main relationships over time with them, the leadership has typically been with department chairs. Those relationships are more robust in certain departments, admittedly, than in others. But we're very aware, thankfully, when they do have programming changes on the horizon, and they are pretty responsive to us when we have questions about whether or not we're sure that our students are showing that they're well prepared when they come to the Park River Forest High School schoolhouse door. The standards-based curricula is something that, of course, everyone knows we're working on. The Illinois learning standards are robust, and they require kids to meet a high level in order to demonstrate proficiency. It's important not only that our teaching is strongly built upon the standards, but that it's articulated across grade levels and vertically from one grade level to the next. Our teachers work very hard at that. As a matter of fact, we spoke earlier, just a moment ago, about the professional leave day for teachers to work together at grade levels. We know that having that time to collaborate is really essential. And then our unique level courses, those are, of course, here at the middle school, not at the elementary, but we do offer accelerated programming for students who require it, and systems of intervention, the multi-tiered systems of support, a robust special education program. The key is that learning is accessible for all of our kids, regardless of what skills they bring or don't to their experience in school. We've talked recently about the robustness of our English Learner program and how we're hoping to continue to expand that, because we're seeing slowly a gradual increase in the number of English learners that are coming to Illinois. So these are the ways in which we really need to be intentional about meeting kids' teaching and learning needs. As far as their competencies, I would say that this is probably the area I'd want to focus on most strongly this evening when we asked the question, how do we know our children are prepared for high school? Unlike when many of us attended school, and the main focus was either memorization or regurgitation of what the teacher told us was important, we're really trying, in every school I'm sure, but particularly in District 90, to build young people who own their learning and understand their role in it actively. This is the essence, what you see on the slide, of Universal Design for Learning, that we're helping students to understand that they can, they themselves can acquire information in different ways and give them even a sense of responsibility to that. The ability to show what they've learned outside of the traditional methods that maybe you and I were exposed to as kids. This could be particularly important if a student attends a high school where, in order to get advanced credit or honors credit or something like that, or to attend a program like an international baccalaureate program, they have to be able to demonstrate that they understand the content at the higher levels of Bloom's taxonomy, so kids that can analyze, synthesize, evaluate, as opposed to just demonstrate that they've learned the content at a more surface level. And engagement. Honestly, this is probably one of the most important elements of helping students own their own learning. They're understanding that they have to engage and that they are able to engage in the learning in active ways, that they know their learning style, that they know that there is never one specific learning style that is usually called for in a learning situation, but that they're able to learn independently and demonstrate that independently is really important. So we're trying to build those skills for our kids.
So Ed, how do we assess that we're doing that once they leave us?
Once they leave us?
Yeah, well, there's no way to know.
Gosh, that would be a good question. That might be one of those things we could do better. We do get feedback, you know, largely from the public high school, not so much from the private schools, about our students' performance. The Tri-Board Equity Committee, I know, is talking about the ability for all three school districts, 90, 97, and 200, to share data about high school achievement. But, you know, there's no conventional format mechanism, I should say, that probably applies for that.
So what does the public high school say?
About what?
The feedback. You said they gave feedback.
Their general assessment has been that our kids are pretty well prepared.
That's
anecdotal.
But as Stacy just mentioned, we don't have any mechanisms in place to garner that. So, you know, it's interesting. We'll have six students, graduates of D90, that are going to be involved in a strategic planning process later this month, starting next month, I should say. It'll be interesting to see what they share about how prepared they were for high school and what they think of, you know, the program that's in place here.
And I think one of the things I remember from the Tri-Board Equity meeting that was, I think, last January, where there was an attorney who came and spoke about part of the reason why we don't have this established mechanism is because it's actually not an easy thing to do, given that we're two different districts, but that three different,
yeah,
if you're with D97, but that we can't just get that information easily from D200 because it's privacy issues and the parents have to sign a release. You know that it is, that there's a process to it, and that's part of what the conversation that's happening with the Tri-Board meetings of, is there a way to set this up so we can get more information from OPRF?
It seems like it should be simple, but it isn't.
It's not. And that's what I think is an important thing to know. It's not, we don't have the mechanism because it is,
it's not important.
It's not important. It's just that it is, there's legal steps to it and that it's more of a process.
Well, I guess it would behoove us to come up with a list of questions that we would ask that might represent achievement at OPRF or Fenwick or any of the remedial schools, and then see which ones they could answer and which ones they couldn't.
We did start preliminary meetings on a data sharing agreement between 97 and 200.
I'm sorry, Sadie.
So we started preliminary meetings on a data sharing agreement with 97 and 200. It's just we're just in the very early stages collecting documents and agreements from other districts and taking a look, because it is a legal document essentially, trying to determine what that quota should look like. So it's started, but it's going to take some time.
In fairness, though, if it was a priority of the board, we could solicit that information ourselves. I mean, there's nothing that says that we have to garner it from the high school.
Mm-hmm.
We could, you know,
mm-hmm,
certainly do some type of outreach or perception survey or something like that of graduates. So, you know, if that's something that you feel is important for us to learn about, learn more about, we'd be glad to.
I'd be willing to participate in that.
You're not in high school anymore.
No, I'm not, but, and I wasn't a dean, I graduated.
I know there have been certain questions that we've asked and you've communicated and they've given us answers with numbers. Had no personal data, you know, exposure or risk.
Yeah.
So
I will say, as a parent of a current sophomore there, I will say that the grading systems there seem to be very rigorous comparatively to Roosevelt. Someone who was achieving a certain level really has to work their tail off to not even get close to where they were in middle school. Yeah.
I think that's just high school.
Yeah, no, yeah, it's college.
It's
prep, yeah.
I think that's departments,
or
too.
Or preparation.
Like different
college,
high schools.
Yes. But.
Yeah, certain departments have different standards, it seems.
They like the air conditioning.
To be successful in school and in life, it's not all about the book learning, as they
right
say.
I mean, I don't agree.
And so we want to make sure that the children also have you know, the executive functioning skills, the social emotional skills, the ability to weather some of the challenges, the resilience, the resourcefulness, those elements that can help a young person become, or at least move closer to becoming self-actualized. And see, these are just some examples of the ways in which we try to weave that through the program here. Our teachers are still referencing growth mindset, which is a focus of the district, specifically a couple of years ago with our One District, One Book. I continue to remain extremely proud of the efforts of our faculty, staff, and administration around the Roosevelt Advisory Program, not only getting it off the ground, but their willingness to continue to try and tweak it as students provide feedback about what's helpful for them they would like to see, which is truly a work in progress. Our partner relationship with our parents at Support Connect for Kids has been extraordinary, and those parent volunteers deserve a big hats off for the way in which over the years they provided programming for families, supports for teachers in classrooms, and resources for schools to deploy around social emotion. And this last bullet point is something that we're pretty excited about. You know, for schools to use restorative justice approaches was actually mandated in law a couple of years ago, but that really kind of the concept of a restorative approach to conflict or misbehavior has been something that's not all that far off the Roosevelt Middle School, particularly, kind of philosophy about discipline. And so working with social workers and the school administration, they have some nice things in place here that I think are helping to move kids away from seeing discipline type of issues or conflict as having to be resolved in a punitive way, and instead in a way that helps to grow them and own their behavior. Many cultural elements make our district unique, but these are other assets, of course, that our kids have in their backpack when they leave us. A place where a lot is expected of them and they deliver. A school system, obviously, with parents and families that really value education and send their very best kids here every day, prepared to learn. Opportunities like the Power Scholars Academy partnership we have with West Y and our relationship with Forest Park 91. Some of the supports that are provided through some of the mental health agencies, counseling services in the community, partners like the River Forest Community Center, the River Forest Public Library, Park District. These are all assets that our kids have. We hope that as the adults, we bring this continuous improvement mindset to the teaching and learning that goes on in the schools, because we think it's an important way to view the work that we do here. And we'd be remiss not to count our blessings, obviously, with the adults that work with our kids. They're very dedicated to what we do. Technology's been a big part of the district plan over the course of the last two strategic plans. Want to emphasize that really here we're talking about instructional technology. While kids, as we all know, are digital natives, and they're very comfortable with all things tech, helping the kids to understand how technology specifically can be used for learning and that they can own as part of the learning process has been a really important thing to do very deliberately. The digital citizenship curriculum is in place across the district. It's most robust, as I hope you would expect with the middle school, mainly because this is the age where kids are starting to make choices that can have consequences and implications. The technology skill development specifically for teaching and learning. Obviously, organizational and executive functioning tools are great assets for kids today that many of us didn't have when we were kids. Remember the whole spiral bound calendar? We were using that in River Forest not that long ago, actually. And then specifically, how can they use technology to be successful with productivity? And the Google, particularly the Google platform, has been a real asset because when they leave us, no matter where they go, they will have those tools at their disposal. You know, it doesn't matter whether the platform maybe that high school uses for one-to-one is Chromebook or Mac or PC. There's some things we can do better, and we always try to identify those things where we continue to grow. There's a lot of increased attention around the idea of trauma-informed care for children. This is an area that we need to learn more about. It's unfortunate that we have, in every community, kids that are dealing with trauma, and it makes it very difficult for them to learn and be successful in the classroom, and how we can understand that trauma, and it can come in many shapes and packages, in order to help kids work through that and then be attentive and ready to learn is a really important consideration for us. As the board is very aware, and many community members, we are looking at the middle school schedule. Ensuring we have adequate instructional time for expansive learning experiences, regardless of the subject area, is a really important consideration. Focusing on and providing for the needs of underserved student populations has been a priority for this board and the administration and the community for a long time. We still have work to do. And when we say underserved, there are many subgroups of students that may not necessarily always first come to mind as maybe being traditionally disenfranchised, but we need to acknowledge that there are lots of different ways that maybe we aren't serving all students fully, and we need to consider that and keep it front of mind. And then this issue of continuing to support teachers. Our teachers work very hard to build relationships with kids, to get to know them, and be invested in their lives. But there are things probably that we can continue to do administratively to foster that and to make that even easier for teachers. And so we want to have those discussions about the ways that we can support them, and we can go past the goal of inclusion and move closer towards really making this a place for belonging.
It's never surprising when you ask kids about the most engaging experiences in school that so many of them mention an outstanding teacher. That is, I think, something that all of us remember. And it's nice to know that that's still going on. Teachers out there changing lives.
The last frame is questions. I mean, I think each one of these bullet points could be unpacked. And we have a lot to say about everything that you included here. It's a really nice summary. I don't have any questions, but I know answering that question is ongoing. It's the mission of this district. What are we doing to prepare kids for the next step, next grade level, and when they leave us?
Well, we're lucky. I look in our audience tonight, and we have a district administrator, we have a school administrator, we have a couple of faculty members. Obviously, we have parents and interested community members who are here. So, at least in terms of D90 employees, we may have some folks who have some expertise on these things. If you have specific questions you want to ask, or dive into in more detail. And if not, that's okay. It was intended to be.
I think, personally, I don't have any questions about all that except for.
I have a question. I'm just thinking about the strategic plan committee that's coming up, and I did that about, this was 5 years ago. when I did that, and it's somewhat of a blur at this stage of the game, but are the opportunities that you listed at the end, those things, they can be incorporated into our strategic plan, correct?
Well, they may not be in those words exactly, but one of the nice things about the strategic planning process, you'll recall this when I jog your memory, is that and we're using the same facilitation group and the same general process as we did 5 years ago. The second component will require the strategic planning team to really look closely at that SWOT analysis. So strengths, weaknesses, opportunities, and threats. And I would guess that these items are going to be ones that will come forward either as weaknesses or opportunities. I hope so. And some others probably that are just as valid.
We can always learn and grow.
Okay, thank you. One quick, it's not a question to be answered right
sure.
now, but at some point I think it would be valuable to have a little bit of a deeper conversation about what are the restorative justice practices that are going on, how are people trained, you know, are there any opportunities for student leadership in that, are we doing circles the way that they're done, or is it more like a social worker or administrator who's managing that? And neither is necessarily right or wrong, but I'm just curious, like, what are we doing and what are we looking to do in the future? And what's working
well? Our
current
approach is more of the second, so
that's
it's responsive
what I
as
yes.
opposed to proactive. But you're right, there are many different approaches to that.
Mm-hmm.
So we could certainly provide for the board maybe like an information
It would be
item.
Nice to know if
we,
an incident is triggered, what happens?
Yes.
What's our procedure?
Sure.
How do we respond to that?
I attended at the Oak Park Public Library. They had, I dropped in for a couple of the sessions where they were talking about restorative justice in the schools. And there was a speaker who came from Texas who has really pushed it in her, I think, high school, which is different than what we have. But there's a lot of opportunity, I think, for student involvement as well as some of the staff to be trained in some restorative justice practices.
You can definitely come forward with that.
Thank you.
Sure. Oh, sorry. That would be my task list for to-dos. Sorry. If I have the grocery list on there, then we're in real trouble. But
that's my job, Ed.
Thanks, Anthony.
Yeah.
Okay. If there are no other comments or questions, we can move on. So.
Yes.
Let's have an overview of the D90 Wellness Initiative. We want to make sure that our
5K coming up Saturday.
Cakes to boot. So my hope would be, and we won't spend too long on this, but a lot of time and effort goes into ensuring that this District 90 Wellness Initiative is managed thoughtfully for our faculty and staff. So I was hoping, Anthony, you might just share some of the highlights of the work that you've done to put this together for our teachers.
Sure. This list it's not all encompassing of all the benefits that we give in terms of wellness, because we do have, this doesn't include our robust medical, dental, and life insurance programs, Section 125 flex spending, Section 105 health reimbursement arrangements, employee assistance plans, online teledoctor plan, which I always find fascinating because we have that ability to have a video conferencing with a doctor over your phone, which it's always fun to explain those. There's symptoms to that person. But this is really a summary of what we do outside of the general standard benefits. And in addition to telling, you know, your boss that he's got his online, you know, to-do list on the screen. Very quickly, I mean, more in chronological order, starting from the beginning of any specific school year. In the fall, or specifically September of each year, we host at no cost to the participants an on-site flu shot clinic. We also, through our Blue Cross Blue Shield providers, offer a fitness program, a weight management program, a dynamic wellness program. These are membership abilities to have unlimited access to national networks of fitness centers. I would say ability to link to a portal to get a lot of resources for tools, including things about healthy living and other healthy activities, earning points, so you can use those to redeem those points for popular health and wellness merchandise and services. That's all through our standard Blue Cross Blue Shield. From September to May of each year, through a partnership with the West Cook YMCA, we host an on-site strength training class and an on-site yoga class after school. They're once a week, and they rotate across the three schools each quarter. Certified strength trainers and yoga instructors are sent from the YMCA here to lead the classes. And those have had a good amount of participation from our staff. Also, from September to May of each year, we host an on-site breathing class after school held once a month. It's led by River Forest resident and certified breathing instructor from our company Begin With 10. The program includes a study of anatomy, physiology, and breathing meditation that instructs participants on how to relax. Now, a couple new initiatives we're going to have this year, beginning in January of 2020, also through the partnership with the West Cook YMCA, we're going to be offering a diabetes prevention program. Now, this program is going to be offered to employees that were anonymously identified through our biometric screening, and you're going to hear about that biometric screening in a minute. And it the program is going to be offered to those employees that were considered pre-diabetic. And the program will be held at the West Cook YMCA. It'll help participants reduce the risk of developing type 2 diabetes by making lifestyle changes with a focus on healthy eating and physical activity. This will take place over 25 sessions for over 1 year. So it is a big undertaking and a commitment. They'll also, if they are in that program, receive a complimentary membership with the West Cook YMCA while they're in the program. Also, beginning in January of 2020, through that same partnership, we're going to offer a weight loss program. It'll be designed to help people seek a healthier weight by achieving their goals by making small, modest changes. It'll be a 12-week course, and it'll also be held at the YMCA, and participants will also receive a complimentary membership during that 12 weeks if they're in that. The reason why it's being held at the YMCA for more anonymity. In February of each year, we host an online health evaluation biometric screening, which I mentioned before. It's available to all employees, spouses, and dependents 18 years or older. It's a blood test, and it is a 32-point blood test, which has, over the years, been one of the most beneficial things we've had to reduce our health insurance costs, but also, quite frankly, to save the lives of our faculty and staff. It's identified issues that people have not been able to have their doctor diagnose, also that they haven't had diagnosed themselves even because they went to the doctor a year ago. So it's been one of our most popular activities here. And before I get to the last bullet point, all of the things that we do each year under the umbrella of wellness allows us to qualify for rebates through our insurance program. And the initiatives that we've done over the last few years, since they started the tier rebate program, we've qualified for all three tiers, which has given us a 0.75% rebate on our entire insurance premiums, which is almost $20,000 a year. Those monies go to help build up fund balances, but also to be put back into the wellness initiatives to be able to give more programs like we're doing here through the YMCA, which do cost the district some money. And also to give giveaways to give our participation rate as high as possible in our wellness screening. It's not like not to take away from a pedometer, but it's more than just a pedometer. We've given away things such as Fitbits and iPads with healthy learning apps and things that really get people to participate not only to make lifestyle changes, but to be able to advance their wellness on their own time. Lastly, in February of each year, the RFEA hosts an online wellness hour after school, and that's health and fitness programs through sponsorships from local businesses. Now, it's not a district event. It's the RFEA that does that, but the district is a financial contributor towards that, so we'll call that a wellness initiative on their behalf. So I think they've all been very successful. The only bad thing about the tier structure of the rebates is that you have to keep doing more things every year, so we can't rest on our laurels. So we have to get more and more creative each year to try to keep getting the rebates. Are there any questions at all about our wellness initiatives? All to keep people well.
A lot of stuff going on.
Yep.
At the last open house, I noticed not just teachers with standing desks, but some of the rooms are outfitted for students to be able to stand and work, which I think is
right.
Something that you don't see at all in
right.
School.
And I didn't list that as a wellness initiative because that's part of your strategic plan for flexible learning spaces.
Okay. Love that plan.
That's fun. Yeah, it's good stuff.
Thank you.
Thank you. And Anthony, the district thanks you for your efforts to carry this program forward. It's a lot of time, but we know it has significance.
Anytime I get an email that says wellness, I reach for my gym shoes and I think I better get out of here. There are many emails. It's good. The message is out there. All right.
I know Dr. Hawley is going to share a word or two about our summer school program, and she's willing to do so. And Anthony may couple that with some comments also then about the finances. So.
Sure. So our fearless summer school leader is part of her different district. We're going to miss her dearly, and we're going to be posting her job over in another month. But she was kind enough to put together a very comprehensive report before she left. In the report, you can see the timeline for putting summer school together, the classes that we ran, the registration. You may have noticed that the middle school enrollment has been ticking up a little bit every year. The elementary school is a little more volatile. Some years we have more kids, some years we have less. We've really made an effort to try to streamline it. In the past, we would run a lot of classes that would end up getting canceled, and one of our big things this year is to streamline and make sure that there are fewer cancellations, and that we're running classes that really will fill. So I think we've been a little more successful with that every year. This is our second year of offering flexible classes where parents could sign up for 1 week of something, or 2 weeks, or all four weeks, but giving families a little more flexibility where they wouldn't have to sign up for all 4 weeks if they knew that they only needed a summer camp experience for 2 weeks before the family went on vacation or the child started a different activity. So the goal is to make it more flexible, make it more appealing. I think we found in the surveys that the STEM classes have been popular, so we try to offer as many as we can. Small summer school shop around here, so we do our best. And at the end, there's some suggestions for next year in terms of things we might want to consider improving. And it's hard to believe that getting towards the end of October, as I just sent an email to Denise to say it's time to talk summer school again. Not even November 1st yet. So,
thank you.
Well, I think the first thing that we notice is the number of students is pretty steady for the past 5 years that they've been here, but the class sections, as you mentioned, definitely are more efficient, yet you still have 57 sections of classes and a variety of courses that kids are taking. So still having the variety, the enrichment, the extended school year, which is obligatory, but going down so many sections definitely is noticeable. Good job.
And on page 102 of the financial section, so you see the revenues, which are based on the fact that there were some fewer students in fewer sections. And then the expenditures were based on all of the rates that we approved in the prior spring, just before it started. So this includes all costs associated with providing the mandatory extended school year program. It is a loss, but I will say that the loss has decreased from the prior year. So. The board understands that there are losses to this program, but also understands that having these options is what's beneficial to the community.
I would echo that. In some school districts, well, of course the districts still need to encumber the costs for extended school year. They run extended school year in isolation, and it's not advantageous for those students or for general ed learners that could participate in a robust summer school program alongside them if given the opportunity. So the model is admittedly somewhat imperfect, but again, my hat's off to Allison for overseeing it. Katie Collins, as was mentioned, was the summer school principal and did a fabulous job. I know she's doing great things off in her other district now as a first-time administrator, so it's neat to see her successful from afar. But the greatest thing, of course, is to get to see the kids in the classrooms learning and excited and with their age-appropriate peers across the board. And, looking at some of the names of these courses, I'm kind of disappointed. Maybe I didn't take a couple of them, but I might have been too tall for a few of them.
I will say briefly, having a child who's had to attend summer school for extended school year and being in a district before where it was operated in isolation, his excitement to be able to, yes, he has to take the reading and math, but that he can choose another class that is more of an elective and fun and As kids get older, it's harder to make them do what you want them to do. And so it has worked well, particularly in middle school, where there are some pretty interesting classes for the kids to take. And I think even though it is at cost, I agree with the value for not only the kids who are in extended school year, but having it as an opportunity for parents in the district to send their kids for summer school options.
There's a lot of competition out there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in just the last 10 years, the number of competing programs that are eager to have our students' time,
mm-hmm.
and our families' dollars are real. You know, we're in a community with two outstanding universities, and so close to the city and other opportunities. It is nice to see that we're still able to serve the needs of a good number of families and students. So.
I do think one important difference from last year previous year was we moved our timeline up because a lot of camp registrations start a lot earlier, so
yes.
We wanted to make sure that people had a full range of opportunities and options that they could select for their child. Part of it was we wanted to make sure that we aligned it with when conferences were, especially if we were making recommendations for ESY or enrichment at the summer school program, is that we can coincide that conversation. People would have their registration materials and we could be up and running. So we're going to try to do that again this year and see if we can try to align ultimately with early camp registration.
Okay. Thanks for your efforts. So on the next item, which is just an update regarding strategic planning, we had four very quick items, one of which you've already been subjected to, which was the announcement about the community engagement event that will be in December, December 11th. The second item we did want to mention was that the list of strategic planning team members is almost complete. We're down to about five people that we're still trying to kind of fill those slots. They're mostly staff and a couple of student graduate slots. That team is almost fully complete, and of course as soon as it is, we'll send it to the board so that you're aware we'll be participating. And thank you to our two board members that are going to be part of that team. The third item I wanted to share is regarding the document that's in the packet. Board members will see on page 103 kind of an overview of the conversation that they had at the board retreat back in August. And we just wanted to reassure board members that these items are still front of mind as we're launching with the strategic planning process. And we have talked with the facilitator about some of them, and we'll be talking to the facilitator about the remainder as we kind of finalize the planning in the next few weeks. The last item regarding strategic planning, our administrative team has their final readiness for strategic planning meeting scheduled for Wednesday. And really the purpose of that is helping them to kind of get together some of the data and information we'll be asking for them to present to the team. So things are moving ahead. We feel like we're in pretty good shape, but if you have any questions, either now or moving forward, we'd love to respond.
Do you feel like you have a nice broad mix of constituents?
Yes. Yes, and we're really lucky to have the number of people three full days during the actual day, and then 2 evenings. So people who were willing to do this were pretty generous with their time.
Do they understand? If you like clearly explain to them the time commitment?
That question sounds like it's from someone who sat through one before.
So. Long time. Definitely make sure they know.
Okay. Well, we promised them, good snacks.
Yeah, we had
sandwiches. That didn't do it, though.
We had a good meal, good snacks.
Fair enough.
All the coffee you could drink.
It is, there are a couple of things that are a long stretch of highway, but we do want to make sure that we can do the well. So we'll make sure that people know what they're in for.
Well, there was an excellent presentation on the strategic planning process at the last
hour. Oh, good.
So if you missed that, it's online now.
Okay, thanks.
Thank you for updating us on that. So the next is a board discussion. Illinois Association of School Board Conference Resolutions. And so last year, we sent a delegate from District 90 to voice our opposition to arming teachers. So we're going to put that on the table again. And if there are people attending, the triple I conference. If one of us would volunteer to be the delegate.
I'm planning to attend, and I would be happy to serve as the delegate.
that
right.
if no one else wants to
okay.
do it in my place. I did do it last year.
Do you want to tell us a little bit about the conversation?
It was a very valuable and interesting conversation, and as I believe it's been pointed out in the packet, the difference between passing and not was 24 votes. And it really does draw out differences between downstate and more rural districts and what we deal with here. We are very, very fortunate in our proximity to our first responders. We can have them on site extremely quickly. And many of the downstate districts looked at response times as long as a half an hour to get a police presence or someone who would be able to, someone trained to intervene in an active shooter situation. So their concerns are different. And it would be my expectation that once again it would be another close vote. There were many more people who wanted to talk than there was time to listen to last year, and I expect that that will continue to be the case this year. So having done it once before, I know how strongly our district feels that we do not want to arm our teachers. We don't want guns in our schools. And we don't particularly want gun-toting security people in our schools. And if this should pass, what it would be the beginning of a long process of discussions as to how each district cared to approach this particular situation. But at this point, the Illinois Association of School Boards does not endorse arming educators. And we hope to lend our support to keeping that as the philosophy.
So my personal and professional resolve is remains the same, but what do other people?
If that doesn't that have an impact also on the teacher contracts as well? I mean, I would imagine that the River Forest Teachers Association would not be, you know, if this were to come to pass and let's say the legislature passed something, I would think that unions would have to agree to this as well, correct?
Yes, and what would be passed by legislature or not would be extremely important in terms of how that would play out. Very likely, even if something like that would come to pass, that it would be legislation that would allow this type of thing.
It's not mandatory.
It
yeah, it would not. It would not require it.
And even then, that would be, there are a lot, you're right, a lot of unintended consequences to how that legislation would look. So, again, for the community, I know there are several people here who really understand this element with a lot of depth, but it is a resolution from the Illinois Association of School Boards. So if the resolution were to pass, basically what that would mean that the Illinois Association of School Boards would be in favor of that as one of the planks in their resolutions. Platform and what they stand for, as opposed to having necessarily that resolution either have any significance
it's
in and of itself.
Non-binding, you know.
Right, it doesn't have. But it is, it's, of course, it would be symbolic, and of course, it would be meaningful to the legislators.
I have a question about that. So let's say it passes, and we say we don't want to participate. Do that, but our kids go to a school that for an event or something that does participate in that, then our kids would be, that would be happening at that school, but maybe not necessarily at our school. Is that
perfect example
correct?
Of one of the myriad of issues that would face a legislature considering drafting legislation around this. But
yeah,
even if it were to pass and become
a
resolution by the Illinois Association of School Boards, you'd need a legislature would pick it up and draft legislation. So, you know, it's the legislative
steps,
process.
Yeah.
Right?
Sounds like Don's a little bit, because then you have teachers, that becomes a situation for some teachers who feel strongly one way or the other about it. Got a bit of a...
Well, the piece that we have here that the League of Women Voters prepared raises, you know, interesting and valuable questions, of which there are so many.
Yeah.
to talk about would a teacher who had a gun be able to shoot a student who was in their own classroom if that child happened to pull a gun. You know, it just, the discussion was very robust at the last IASB. You know, I'm sure this one will be too, and there will probably be people well organized trying to get it to pass from the, primarily from the downstate districts.
So do
the
I have...
The position of the board is that we are not for it.
Yes.
Do I have consensus from this board that we will voice our opposition in resolution?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Got it.
That's what we're looking for. All right.
So this is very brief. This next item is the Roosevelt Middle School master schedule revisions. Did want to report back to the board that our outstanding administrative and faculty staff team here at Roosevelt who's been looking at this topic is on schedule, so to speak. They had their meetings on Thursday to continue to try to refine what the recommended schedule would look like. My hats off to the people who are part of that committee and giving their time. They are not yet ready to come forward with a recommended format. There are a couple of things that still probably stand in the way of that at the moment. Thinking through all of the resource issues, capacity issues, facilities issues, staffing and deployments, specifically the time that is available and what that would mean in terms of teaching and learning. Those are all elements that still need some further consideration. But you will see in your board packet, starting on page 107, the results of the parent and community perception survey that was administered. To kind of underscore what this was, as you'll see, it's of course a brief survey. Hopefully all of our families, K-8 and District 90, received it. The purpose, of course, was not to have parents or families tell the district what to do. The purpose was to garner some input around their perceptions of what really held relative value, what were their priorities, what were the things that really spoke to our parents in terms of importance around the school program. The hope, of course, would be that the administration, the faculty, staff, certainly the board's approval, and some educational expertise would be the ones who bear on the recommendation, but we can't do that in a vacuum, and the insight that we've already learned from our parents and community members through a couple of the community forums has been invaluable in helping, I know, the faculty and staff team really think through some of the attending issues. So still more to come. They will be refining a final recommendation. There is a possibility that a final recommendation may have implications or connections to the collective bargaining Teachers Association. If that's the case, that's something as well that would need to be discussed thoughtfully in advance of coming forward with a recommendation. So that's an added element that requires some time and attention. So, you know, hopefully this data will be helpful for you as board members and for the community, just for your knowledge. We will have that posted, our hope is tomorrow morning, on the website for your review as well. And if there's any questions,
the whole purpose of revising the master schedule is to have more math instruction. And we all know from all the meetings that we can't just add 15 minutes of math right in the middle of everybody's schedule. It's a thoughtful design that requires change. I don't have any questions. Any questions? Comments?
Was there anything that surprised you
in the survey? No. I think the responses were probably what would be expected based upon feedback.
More people get information through conversations with their neighbors than through social media. Surprising.
So
I was, yeah.
So what does that say about the people
is it
who get
accurate
information
or not?
Through social media?
That it's very, there's a very small population.
Yeah. Where's the neighbor getting their information?
Twitter.
There's a social media person you didn't talk to their neighbors.
It was nice
to
see
we have a close knit community. Yeah, that's good.
It was nice to see so many responses from parents of primary and elementary students too.
Mm-hmm.
So we were grateful for that.
All right.
So that moves us to the National Equity Project. So we had a really great convening, didn't we?
Yes, we did. That was wonderful.
Do you want me to give a summary? Sure. So Ed and I, as you know, are part of the D90 team on the Midwest District Network that the National Equity Project has coordinated. We spent 2 days in St. Charles. One of them was a monsoon of a day. But it was actually a really inspiring meeting. We got to mix with school districts from as far away as Bloomfield Hills, Michigan, and as close as Oak Park, and we had some schools there from Chicago. We had Walter Payton, correct? Yes. And some CPS representatives. So it was an enriching 2 days of work. And what I wanted to read out loud to the board is what the network aspiration is for students, because I thought it was very inspiring. And what the aspiration is that every student emerges from K-12 schooling with strong academic skills, socio-emotional wellness and intelligence, a sense of agency and civic responsibility, and awareness and appreciation of their multiple identities, and a broader set of competencies that equip them to be healthy, happy, contributing adults who can make a positive change in the world. Very aspirational, but I think that it's something that all of the districts, this is something we could achieve and we consider ourselves successful. But the idea is that there will be several meetings over the course of the next couple of months, and they grouped us by our own district team, and they also had us group with other people from other districts who had similar roles. All the superintendents were together, all of them, who were teachers were together, so you can learn from each other and what you were doing in your districts. The interesting part about being a part of the network is that we get to tap into learning from their extended project team partners. For example, we have the University of Chicago Consortium that we get to learn from. There's Stanford School Laboratory Design Team and Castle, who I know has worked with the district before. So they sort of have some ongoing projects that are much bigger than what we're doing in this district that we'll be able to learn from over the course of time. So as we go move through this, Ed and I will report back and let you know what we're learning and what we're able to apply in our own district. And I guess I should add, we had a great team, by the way. We had a lot of really good discussions, a lot of just good team buildings, a lot of laughter and good conversation, but one of the things that we talked about are what are the shared values of District 90. And one of the things, Ed, that you mentioned in your opportunities for learning when you talked about toward the future was what is one of the things we'd really like to see us work on in District 90? One of those things was building relationships with our students. Is that a shared value of this district, and how do we do that? And we had a student panel that presented at this Midwest District Network. They came all the way from California. And we spent a lot of time talking about their experiences and their school districts. And to what you said, what does it mean to have a relationship with your teacher? And how does that affect how you do in school from a very young age throughout your entire career? So that's something that we'll be talking about further in District 90, how we can do it better. So more to come.
That's great. And I know that our equity committee, we did a review of everything that we've been engaged in for the past five years. And so look forward to hearing new ideas as you engage with this network. Good stuff. Okay.
So believe it or not, we have just one more information item, and it's probably as or more important than some of the others, and it is the moment to stop and breathe and thank and appreciate some of our leaders in the district who are doing really important work. The governor has dedicated October 20th through 26th as Principals Appreciation Week. We also in District 90 appreciate our other administrators at that same time. There is no other Administrator Appreciation Week. Director of Special Education Administrator Appreciation Week. So we try to do that all in one fell swoop. But oftentimes, some of these folks are the unseen heroes. Sometimes the things that you may or may not know that take place behind the scenes that can make the difference in the lives of kids, and certainly the ability of teachers to do their work. There's one administrator in our district, I love how he describes his job. He says, it's my job to make sure that teachers have the resources to do theirs. And that has stuck with me, and I think that's probably a mantra for any good administrator. So I'm grateful for our administrators. They're doing a lot of leadership, and we'll try to acknowledge them. couple
thank
of
thank you, Allison.
Thank you.
You appreciated your principal so much, you told them they got to skip a board meeting.
They didn't have to come tonight.
Very good. Very good. It will be appreciated next month.
Finally, that's the end of our superintendent's report.
Wow. That's a lot of great things going on here in District 90. So now I need a motion to move to close the session according to.
Second.
Hold on. You gotta read it.
You
gotta read it.
35 Illinois CS 120 for the purchase or lease of real property for the use of the public body, including meetings held for the purpose of discussing whether a particular parcel should be acquired and collective negotiation matters between the public body and its employees or their representatives, or deliberations concerning salary schedules for one or more class of employees.
Motion.
So moved. Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.